let the rest of the world go ahead, and we work with the governors of those states that want to be involved, the majority of municipalities in the United States that want to be involved, the civil society.
And this is the We're Still In coalition. Yeah, yeah. Yesterday, Governor Inslee and Governor Kate Brown of Oregon and Washington State almost took over the U.S. government's press event by just coming in and stating basically this is a sham.
And I want to say something to the UNFCC. The people that did that peaceful protest, they've been debadged and thrown out.
They have been. Right? Yes.
That's what I understand. I stand to be corrected. If that, anyway, I did a protest that what happened to me as well some years ago. But what they did with that panel, this only first panel, is an impeachable offense, really. I mean, it may. They come and present something.
You mean the U.S. government, the Trump administration.
To do a panel that actually goes against 99.99% of the scientific consensus in the world, right? And to give them a platform to do that, I say to the UNFCC that in fact it is inappropriate and the UN cannot continue to pander to the madness that comes out of the Trump administration. We have to say to them, if you want to be out, you stay out. Don't come and poison this negotiations the way that you're doing. If those that are aligned to the vision of the Paris Accord, limit, you know, imperfect as it is, let us move ahead. Because what they do here is they come, they suck up a lot of oxygen, they hold back negotiations, and let's be blunt about it. It's not as if the Obama administration was perfect here. They also held us back. It's just that, you know, or certainly the Trump administration.
We have 10 seconds for your final
also
message.
Did it. So time is running out. We need American people. And we are happy that at least the American people are with us, if not the American presidency.
We thank you so much, Kumi Naidoo, South African activist, former head of Greenpeace, now chairperson of Africans Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity. And that does it for our broadcast here in Bonn, Germany. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Brecht, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Nicole Salazar, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Amel Ahmed, Nat Needham, Dennis Moynihan. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from COP23 in Bonn, Germany. Thanks for joining us.
Oceans Today. Routine activities on land and water contribute to 6.4 million tons of debris entering the ocean every year. If you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
All thunderstorms produce lightning and are dangerous. Lightning often strikes as far as 10 miles away from any rainfall. Many deaths from lightning occur ahead of the storm. So don't wait until the last minute before seeking shelter. Remember, you are in danger from lightning if you can hear thunder. Learn more about lightning safety at www.lightningsafety.noaa.gov. Lightning kills. Play it safe. This message brought to you by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
Are we done? Okay. It's 6 o'clock, actually 6:01. And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time once again for another edition of the program Off the Wall. Okay, I'm going to cut the theme early because we have less time today. It's a basketball game coming up at 6:45, so we have less time to do our hour-long program. If we talk fast, we can probably fit it all in. It's Emmanuel here, Kyle over there.
Hi.
There's a lot to talk about. There's so much going on. Oh, my God. First off, I was a bit gloomy last week, foreshadowing bad Election Day returns, and I was wrong. I was surprised that people actually turned out and people actually reacted, and it's everything that I was hoping for, but kind of lost my spirit after going through almost an entire year of this. Yeah, Democrats turned out in force, governorships in Virginia and in New Jersey. First transgender representative elected in, where was that, North Carolina?
Yeah.
Virginia. Was it Virginia? I'm sorry.
I think it was Virginia.
There were so many good things that happened out of that, and I'm just thrilled that, we got that shot in the arm. It's only one shot in the arm. We need many, many more, and there are so many other things that have to be reacted to and taken care of, because it's just going to keep happening otherwise.
It's not hard.
No.
It's not hard, people. I mean, really, it's your democracy. This is it's how it works. You know, you get involved, you talk to your friends, and lo and behold, your community sticks up for your ideals. For us to decide, not other people in remote places.
You act locally, you know? Think globally, act locally. That's a phrase I came up with.
It's not just a cliche.
Okay, I didn't come up with it. But if Donald Trump can say he came up with the phrase fake news, I can say I came up with that phrase.
Is that supposed to be like that?
The phone? Yeah. I don't know. Somebody left it like that. I'm not going to touch it. I've learned not to touch things here. Don't touch things. That's a big sign here. Don't touch anything.
Yeah. It's a statement. We're not taking calls tonight. I'm sorry.
We can't because we have 15 minutes lobbed out of our show.
Yeah.
That's just, but we're not going to spend our time complaining about that. That would be counterproductive.
Yes. In the name of the Hunger Games Department.
I don't know what that means.
I'm sorry. Sports saw Department. The Hunger Games. Yes. They're going to see who is the strongest and who gets to live.
Well, I think we're playing Hofstra tonight. The women's basketball team is playing Hofstra in Hofstra.
Oh,
and they may think they have an advantage in Hofstra, but they don't because, you'll see what's going to happen. Tune in at 6:45. Actually, 7 is when the game begins. But anyway, we're talking about acting locally and thinking globally and things like that. Okay, there is a great opportunity right now to do that, to think locally. And something I just found out about through reading Newsday last week. Turns out, we're I think less than half a mile away from Renaissance Technologies, and people around the world now have heard about Renaissance Technologies. How do you describe them? I don't even know what they do. If you ever see Stranger Things, there's this like laboratory where all the craziness happens. That's kind of what this place is.
Hawkins Laboratory.
Hawkins Laboratory. Yeah, it's kind of like that.
What they are is an investment hedge.
Hedge fund.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Okay, hedging is investing against an investment. It's also like short selling.
Maybe
like,
I wasn't clear. I don't know what that means. I don't care. I don't want to know.
You're
what it
betting
means.
Against what everybody else is. That's hedging, or you're.
I usually do that.
You're invested in one thing, but you also hedge that investment by voting for the other team. It's like playing both sides so that you'd never lose. Does that make sense?
But don't we all lose?
We all lose.
All right. Well, anyway, Renaissance, they're right up the hill, literally. And it's so crazy because you have all this evil within a few miles of this place that is key in what has happened here. You have Robert Mercer, the CEO of Renaissance, and his daughter Rebecca, who are key people in the Trump administration, key people who have made this possible. They're in deep with Steve Bannon and Breitbart and all of that. You have the guy that led the march in Charlottesville, who grew up here in Stony Brook in the S section, two blocks away from where I grew up. All right, you've got all this madness that's happening so close to us. Trump has visited here twice, and who knows when he'll come back again. You have to wonder, do these things happen for a reason?
It is very close. It's I would say spitting distance, and invite anyone who's interested to test that theory. But I'm confident in that. The funny thing is, it's not enough to just sort of wait for them to die, because they procreate and they have employees and they have firms that live on.
I you know, I don't want to give the wrong impression, because there are people at Renaissance who are good people. In fact, the main guy who founded it, it turns out to be somebody who actually donated to Democratic candidates, kind of like the opposite of what Robert Mercer is, who's, by the way, leaving in January as co-CEO, but he has still tarnished the name of this company, of this institution, and that is problematic, because what's happening now here at Stony Brook is that they are thinking of naming the medical school after Renaissance, because Renaissance over the years has donated lots of money. Now, Robert Mercer has not donated the lion's share of that money. Granted, I think he's only donated $150 million out of $500 million. You know, talking a lot of money here, but the problem is he and his daughter have tarnished the name of that institution. If you think of Renaissance, you think of Trump now. And what do you think about having the Trump name on our medical school, which is basically what it would be for all time? That's something I just found out about by reading Newsday. The naming of Stony Brook University's medical school as Renaissance School of Medicine, honoring $500 million in philanthropy over more than three decades from current and former employees of investment from Renaissance Technologies, is awaiting State University of New York approval. Now, here's what happened. We have something known as the Stony Brook Council. It's made up of 10 people. Nine of them are faculty, staff, people that are appointed in one way or another, and one is a student representative. Well, turns out the nine voted for this name change, and the one student, who was pretty woke, I think, voted against it, because it's wrong, because you can't put a name of something that represents such evil on one of your main buildings. Yet these people had no problem with it, and now it's gone up to the state of New York up in Albany for approval. This could happen. This could happen soon, unless somebody steps in and stops it, or unless students here wake up, find out about this, for one thing, because it's being kept kind of quiet, and voice their opposition to it. Unless, you know, you guys think this is cool to have that name on a building here on our campus. I think it's very uncool. And like I said, you know, there are good people at Renaissance, but they need to salvage their name. And right now their name is in the trash. And, you know, through no fault of theirs, they let this guy run the place. And this is what happened. This is what happened, tied deeply to the Trump administration. Were it not for Renaissance, there probably would not be a President Trump right now. That is a fact.
Yeah, it's worth noting the distinction is this is a private organization. I don't think they have shareholders. It's very interesting how different corporations who do answer to a board, they still lobby, they still get involved in politics, but they do it at an arm's length, and they use a lot of other firms and outside, and they're sort of even-handed. This is what happens when you decide to get your private organization involved in political issues, instead of distancing and using sort of traditional lobbying methods, you basically drag in the entire firm because you've no insulation. And that's basically what they're faced with now, with all the, controversy and essentially, this name. It's basically, it's like having the hospital named Trump Hospital. I mean, as far as association goes.
It's not that much different, really isn't. And here's the thing. If you type in Renaissance Technologies into Google News, what do you get? You get what's next for Robert Mercer, Steve Bannon's money man. Steve Bannon's money man. That's the top hit for Renaissance Technologies is Steve Bannon's money man. It's just really, really bad, really wrong. While you weren't looking, Trump just appointed a tax evasion expert to head the IRS. It doesn't even have the word Renaissance in it, but yet it's affiliated with Renaissance Technologies. So this can't happen. We can't let this happen. It's just another bad idea, another step in the wrong direction. And it's something local that we do have a say about. If we choose to say something. And, you know, we saw a lot of people saying something last week, last Tuesday on Election Day. Here's an example of something you can do right here. And I hope they make the right decision.
And it's also funny that these are traditional methods. These are the same, you know, private entities and contributors that are lumped in and considered the swamp, as it were. But here they go. And whatever Renaissance or Mercer, whatever he
is in agreement about, whether it's getting control of DC or whatever their special interest is, there is so much that is indefensible. The fact that they are aligned with it makes them even worse. Mm-hmm. Silence says more than them actually saying, no, we're only on board because we like whatever, Cole, you know, you name whatever balderdash they're standing for. But they aren't saying what specifically their interest in being money men for them is, other than what we can assume is racism, sexism, and all the other in vogue conservative principles that are being upheld in these wonderful days and weeks.
All right. Well, moving on, since we don't have that much time today, I'd like to spend so much more time on all these topics, but we do have other things to discuss. I guess, you know, we should probably focus on the elephant in so many rooms these days, and that's the whole Roy Moore situation in Alabama. Now we've mentioned this guy before. This is the guy running for Senate in Alabama. You saw him dressed up in a cowboy outfit. Why is he dressed up in a cowboy outfit? There are no cowboys in Alabama, but he was dressed up like that and holding a gun in the air, and that's the person that they wanted for Senate. Then the allegations of sexual misconduct came out. You notice that's happening a lot lately. There's a lot of allegations of sexual misconduct and predatory behavior and things like that. We'll get into that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, you have a guy that, he's known for putting the Ten Commandments up in front of the state courthouse and all kinds of other ill-advised moves, comments, you name it. But this really takes the cake, because apparently he is accused of molesting a 14-year-old. It seems like 14 is the age of choice for so many people in power. It's really crazy. In this particular case, a woman who's now in her 50s said, yes, this happened. In fact, it's weird because she voted for Trump. You know, she is a Republican, and she's coming out and saying this. So it's really making it hard for the conspiracy people to say, this is a plot by the Democrats to throw this guy's candidacy into turmoil. Doesn't seem that way. Doesn't seem that way at all. And plus, she's not the only one. Other people are coming forth as well.
Yeah, there's a second one. I think individual who was 16 at the time.
Plus, the guy has all kinds of history hanging out amongst teenage girls when he was in his 30s, maybe even beyond that. Supposedly he was kicked out of a mall because he was harassing them. And he signed yearbooks and things like that. So, you know, there's more than just one person say so.
Yeah, he was, I believe, in his 30s at the time. And there's a lot of, I think, muddying from the perspective of Moore that this is somehow a tradition in where he's from, and that somehow he had parental consent to pursue or otherwise interact with these young people, which in most cases, yeah, that's a good idea if you're running an after-school program or a daycare or other field trip.
Hold on, he's a district attorney. That's what I don't understand. He was a district attorney in Alabama. There's all kinds of positions and interests that, necessitate you hanging out with younger people. But being a district attorney doesn't seem to be one of those.
Yeah, that's not like one of those where, you know, working closely with young people is sort of goes hand in hand with the job position.
Unless you want to scare the crap out of them by saying, I'm the district attorney and anything I say is going to be taken as gospel, much like the Ten Commandments I put in front of the courthouse.
He did kind of threaten this young person with that, though, and she's actually been saying that. That's one of the clips that's been played over and over again this week, was essentially that he was wielding his power and that no one would believe her, which is sort of a classic threat. If you tell, I'm going to hurt your family, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of angles to this, and it has sort of larger implications, but also very specific implications, which I think we'll open up a little bit.
Here's the thing: the election is coming up in December, I believe. We're actually going to be in Alabama because part of our travels over the next couple of weeks will take us through that state. In fact, we won't be here next week live; we'll be here through some recorded device. And so listeners, please tell us if there's something you want us to do in Alabama while all this controversy and crazy. Unless he drops out of the race by then.
He's doubled down already. The only way he's going to drop out is if it's click, go the cuffs or something, you know?
Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? But even then, this is what's weird about this. The Republican voters seem to be doubling down and saying, well, you know what, we have to forgive him if it is true. Anything but the Democrat, anything but Doug Jones, who's the Democratic candidate. This is the guy who, when we were in Birmingham, we drove to the church where the four girls died in the fire.
Yes.
Terrorist act in Birmingham. It's most, I don't want to say amazing, it's the wrong word. It's just very moving to be there and to see where this horrible act took place back in the 60s, where basically, there's no question about it, it was a terrorist act.
It's an incendiary device in a church.
Yeah, and four young girls were killed. In fact, there's a movie called Four Young Girls that documents it. And they got away with this for so long, but Doug Jones, the Democratic candidate, prosecuted two of them. Fairly recently, because that's how long they eluded any kind of responsibility. And this guy is seen as worse than someone who is suspected of being a child molester. Think about that. Think about I would vote for a Republican over a child molester if the child molester were a Democrat. Hell, even if he was in the Green Party, I would still vote for a Republican over that if I believe that to be true. And it seems like there's a lot of evidence to suggest that, yeah, there's some truth to this. There's definitely a lot of collaborating or
corroborating.
I always had trouble with that word. Evidence from people who don't know each other, a particular time frame, where you have to ask a question. You know, there's something here. And the fact that the defenses that I've seen so far have compared him to the father of Jesus. I'm not kidding. Basically, Joseph and Mary. That's Jesus's parents' names, right? Joseph and Mary.
No, it's Mary and Joseph.
What do you mean it's Mary and Joseph?
Want to get technical?
Okay, fine. Anyway, they're saying, yeah, Mary was a teenager and Joseph was in his 30s. Like, really? You're comparing yourself to the father of Jesus. Okay, fine. You want to go that route?
Yeah, I got a lot of really messed up relationships in my fantasy world I could throw out there as an example. Let me tell you about some mystical storybook thing, and then I'll compare what I do in real life to it and see how that goes.
We're talking about Jesus.
Oh,
let's
Jesus!
Not make it about you. It's about Jesus.
No, I've heard a lot about him. Believe
All
me,
right.
I'm confirmed.
Well, maybe
and
you
everything.
Need to hear this.
Yeah.
Okay, supposedly it's an immaculate conception. First of all, okay, so Joseph and Mary didn't even have sex to produce.
You mean he didn't? The meat.
I just figured out Christianity. Oh my God, Joseph didn't want to be condemned by his culture for having sex with a teenager, so he lied about it. And so I don't know where this baby came from. It must be a miracle. And Jesus.
So this is like a baby daddy story?
Could that be it? Could that be
like
at the root of everything?
Christ is the original whoa.
Oh, I'm not going to say that, but oh my God. If we want to go with this, if we want to go and say that Roy Moore is the father of Jesus, and let's go back a couple of thousand years,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying, I didn't do this, and one of the 14-year-olds somehow got pregnant, it wasn't me. And they didn't have DNA tests back then,
no,
right? So,
no.
I'm probably offending so many people right now.
You know, I just wanted to point out one thing. I honestly, what else has Roy Moore got going on? Like, this is his life. So, of course, he's clinging to it. Of course, he's doubling down. And he's just going to continue to be upfront. You know, a lot of younger, I'm going to say this is ageist, but maybe not younger. Okay, I don't need to be ageist even to say this. I'd go there. But a lot of other successful individuals
mm-hmm.
at all ages,
mm-hmm.
they've, you know, reached that success because they have a variety of interests in their life. And they're able to take something like this and say, you know what? This is messy. Maybe it's time for me not to be a public figure anymore because it's any longer because basically I went doo-doo in the bed kind of thing. You know, you kind of
doo-doo in the bed. Okay.
You ruined your platform. Maybe you should start a little like fruit stand or something, you know, but he has nothing else going on and won't go away.
Well, yeah, I guess he's got nothing else going on now. It's all or nothing for him. But seriously, how does he get past this? I don't think there's any way, because all the Republicans are coming out against him now. Finally, it took long enough. Republican candidates, that is, Republican senators. There's talk that they won't even seat him in the Senate if he does get elected. But what does it say about the people in Alabama that will not admit any wrongdoing here on his behalf and will continue to vote for him, anything but a Democrat? There's a sickness there. There is something really wrong when you can't look beyond your political beliefs and say, yeah, you know, the other person is better this time. We're just so divisive right now, and it's really kind of frightening.
We've recognized this, though. We've recognized this about conservative politics, the Republicans in particular, just how loyal and how much they stick with one another, even in the face of stuff like this, which isn't entirely cut and dry because a lot of people are distancing themselves.
Do you think it's unique to Republicans, though? I mean, I think, it can happen on all sides if you're very divisive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in a lot of different groups, there's constant sort of but the degree to which it goes on, I think, is far less in that organization. And well, we're seeing it now that only certain individuals who can will distance themselves. Others will just sort of go along and hope that it sort of disappears or fizzles out.
Let's look at the parallels, because Roy Moore is not the only case. We've seen so many cases in the last couple of weeks, a lot in Hollywood. You know, we've seen Kevin Spacey be completely...
blacklisted.
Blacklisted, yeah. I mean, basically House of Cards is done.
86.
And Louis C.K. And just there are more than I can even list here. They're coming out of the woodwork, and it's good that it is coming out of the woodwork, because people finally are stepping forward, having the guts to confront people who have done them tremendous injustices. And it's something that I think is in every single industry, every single social group. But the point here is that a lot of these people are, if you want to look at the politics, are on the left. And the left is not defending them. They're not defending Kevin Spacey. They're not defending any of the other Hollywood people that have been accused or found or even admitted to doing these things. So I think there comes a point where, you know, you have to say, this was somebody I believed in, but clearly it's no longer somebody I want to believe in because of things I've become aware of. And we have to all be able to do that, regardless of how much. I mean, I loved Bill Cosby for a large part of my life. And then I found out about all the accusations. And obviously it's very... it's very hard to believe that all these people conspired to come up with all these accusations against this guy out of thin air. So, you know, to me, even if the guy is not in prison, he's guilty. He's basically, so many people have come forward with similar stories without working together to come up with those stories. So you have to weigh all that. You have to basically decide for yourself, is this still somebody that you can support? And or look up to, and many times you'll be disappointed. You'll be, because icons constantly let you down. They really do. And when they don't let you down, we want to tear them down. And sometimes that results in unfairness. I was talking to you about this earlier, and I said there's one case I can think of over the years that I think was not treated fairly, and that's the case. And I know a lot of people will disagree with this, but that's the case of Michael Jackson, because I think Michael Jackson never really hurt anybody. I think he was just weird and kind of, you know, put a lot of people off. But I think he genuinely cared about the people that were around him. And yes, there were a lot of young people around him. But I don't think he actually, and this is based on you know, what I've seen in court transcripts and the way other people have said things either for or against his case. It just seemed like he was an oddball.
Yeah.
And an easy target for people that didn't understand where he was coming from.
Compared to the sort of accusation, or what in retrospect was sort of levied at him, or I would say that he did a lot more good for the world than from what bad, I guess, can be gleaned from those accusations and so on. Although it's yeah.
So many people spoke out.
Looking back, it's, you know, doesn't compare to this kind of stuff.
So many people who were kids, they spoke out, you know, supporting him, saying he was a positive influence.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you have to look at that because, yeah, people can lie. They can come up with all kinds of stories. That is certainly possible. I mean, hell, when I was in school, we all tried, I guess the statute of limitations over on this, we all tried to get Mr. Zukowski fired, who was a math teacher. By just accusing him of certain things. But, you know, it didn't hold up because, you know, a bunch of kids, somebody's going to crack, and it just never really went anywhere. But there was, you know, discussion of it. Kids can be very calculating and cold, but, you know, you have to really make enemies of them for that to happen in the first place. You have to wonder why that is.
You have to be smarter than them.
You got You got to realize these are kids and they're intelligent.
You have to be an adult.
And that's, you know, I believe in treating kids as adults intellectually, you know, having great conversations, but you never forget they're kids.
Yes.
You never forget they're vulnerable. You never forget that you're in a position of power, authority, all kinds of things. You know, society looks at you in a different way, and you can never abuse that. You can never abuse that particular position because it's an honor to be in that position in the first place. And this is what so many people don't get. They seem to miss it. And I just wonder, does our society emphasize that? Does it say that, you can treat kids like second-class citizens, they can't do anything about it, and eventually the more evil amongst us really take advantage of them and leave them traumatized for most of their lives?
Yeah. I would say, like, it's, you know, parents are too jaded to care. People who are caretakers aren't paid enough to care, you know, and then we create little adults that are themselves abusers and terrible people. But I think that there's a gift in that. And I think when you don't have young people in your life as much, you tend to take those opportunities, as you said, as more of a gift and an honor, like you said, to do right by them. And I think it's also, you know, like one thing I think of is they're little recorders. They're recording everything. They're sponges.
Sometimes literally.
Yeah, they're soaking up every little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're in a position and you are then sort of taking advantage or abusing younger people, you're very, very selfish and short-sighted. You're not looking at the sort of adult they'll become as a result of you taking advantage. And in many ways, it is much healthier, and is always healthier, I think, to be a consistent presence of good over that long term. So when they're adults, they're like, yeah, you were a good person in my life because, you know what, I had crazy things in my life. I had a lot of good people and a lot of good. And I also fault society a little bit because I think that, you know, and I'm not going to have too much pity for some of the abusers, but it's disappointing at the least to have people who basically are closeted their whole lives. And imagine there are 10 times as many people out there who are essentially closeted in public, and that they spend their entire lives in the closet and then are outed over this. It's a waste. It's pathetic. It's disappointing. It's really tragic. But I think as much as 99.99% of that is the responsibility of the adults taking advantage of the gift that is being an influence, I think society sort of has a role in repressing that in a lot of ways. You add to that sort of jaded and apathetic adults who are interacting with kids. You create circumstances where abuse is happening, is able to happen, especially when adults who take advantage of that are the only ones that are interested and the only ones that are given that gift, that opportunity. So we need more trustworthy and good adults out,
you know,
there.
As far as being jaded, that is something that I'm concerned about because, you know, in this society, we're very reactive to the threats that are out there. And we tend to overstate them many times. Not that this is something that should be minimized in any way, but when you extend it to be suspicious of anyone who is not in your immediate family or anyone who is not completely 100% known to you and treat everyone else as a hostile force, you're helping to create a society that isn't a whole lot of fun to live in and that is not healthy for people growing up. You know, we've seen the reaction to this on many levels, not just as far as bringing up kids, as far as, you know, walking down the street. Well, does this person have a gun? Do I have to have a gun, too, because this person's going to shoot me? For, you know, it's basically a very unhealthy way to live where you just assume everyone is out to get you. And we should never foster that kind of society. And I see this happening with all these revelations that are coming out. Oh, my God, this person took advantage of that person. Just it never seems to end. And it makes you realize that there are so many untold stories out there. But the other thing we forget is that there are a lot of good people out there. And, you know, it's easy to make make jokes about Catholic priests. But, you know, not being religious myself, I can say that most Catholic priests are not child molesters. Most of them are good people. And unfortunately, they have a big hill to climb because of the people who have abused their position. And they are seen as somebody to be suspicious of. And that shouldn't be our default reaction. Same thing with teachers. Same thing with scout leaders. I mean, you know, we've seen it ourselves in the hacker community because we spend a lot of time with younger people as well. And, you know, for those who are older and jaded, why do you want to hang out with young people? There's only one reason you could possibly do that. Kind of a parallel to what people say about hacking. Why would you want to know this? There's only one reason you'd want to know that, to commit fraud. It's a horrible way to live. It's a very unhealthy way to live. And it's not good for people growing up. It's not good for people who are already grown up. You know, it's something we need to take a good long look at and realize that we can do better.
And those groups are already separated by design in a lot of ways. There's ageism, of course, and then also just the discouragement of intergenerational learning. You know, you have sort of distinct family units, but also there's, you know, many things to be learned from people across generations. Older people can learn from younger people and vice versa. So the context is important, but there's no shortage of baked in stuff to keep that kind of learning away from sort of common norms. I mean, there's a lot to separate people. So it is a bit I guess less counter to share and to teach people. And then we find that in technology, there's a lot. I mean, especially with technology, because younger people are using things that older people don't even know about. And that's, and of course with what we do, it's a kind of that early age where young people just start getting into computers. So we see it a lot. It's very common. There's other industries too. This, it kind of reminds me of a guy who retired as a bike mechanic. And one of the things in his sort of letter to all the customers he hated was that, you know, something, I'll paraphrase, but something about, you know, being accused of, you know, going for kid butt every time you're teaching a child to ride a bike. Because no, this is true. When you're showing a child how to ride a bike, you grab the back of the seat and get them going on the two wheels. And as a bike mechanic who would run a shop for years, this was a constant thing. And parents would say, why are you grabbing my? No, I'm making sure your child doesn't fall over. Do you want me to help your child learn to ride a bike? Or do you want something that looks like something to not look that way, and then your child doesn't actually get to learn to ride a bike?
Maybe a brochure is in order saying, this is exactly what I will have to do to get your child not to fall.
I'm touching the seat of the bicycle, not the seat of the child.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of crazy people out there that would take advantage. There's no question about that. But if you go around assuming that everyone is up to nefarious purposes, It's a very bad place to go. And how's your kid going to evolve into an adult with this constant fear and suspicion? You know, by all means, listen to you. Whenever anybody makes any kind of accusation, I think this should be the cardinal rule. You listen. You listen to, if they're 5 or if they're 55, you listen to them. All right. And there should never be an exception to that. It takes a lot of guts to come forward and accuse somebody, even if you don't have direct contact with them. It takes guts, and you have to acknowledge that. Now, if the facts don't support their case, that will come out. That will come out in time. But you never push them away and say, you don't count. You know, how dare you stand up to this person? You know, I think once that's why you're seeing so many of the, so many people come out right now, because they realize, hey, it's okay for me to say something. I can actually do this now because other people are saying something, and I won't be completely shut down. I won't have my life destroyed for daring to stand up. And people have carried this for decades without being able to say a word. Think about that before you assume that they're making it up. Again, you know, if they're making it up, the facts will bear that out at some point. But to actually come forward, that is something that we all have to acknowledge takes a tremendous amount of courage and strength. But, you know, I also, it goes beyond just predatory behavior on this level. You know, kids grow up being tortured in all kinds of different ways. And sometimes that is like a super authoritarian type of upbringing where, you know, when I was growing up, kids were afraid of their dad coming home. They feared it because, you know, he'd find out how they misbehaved and they would get the corporal punishment because that was all the rage back then. And you should not ever grow up in a household where you're afraid. You should always feel safe there. And there are so many kids, even to this day, that don't have that. We take it for granted. And we're both lucky enough to come from households where, you know, we didn't live in fear.
I got spanked. I got swatted a couple times.
I got slapped. I never got spanked. Wasn't in my household, but occasional slaps.
Yeah.
Once when I was down at the train tracks in Jamaica, Queens, late at night. Well, not late at night, like 6 o'clock. And I came home. My mother was holding a belt out the window of the apartment building.
Oh, snap.
I never got hit with a belt, but there was a threat. Like,
how about bar of soap?
I don't know why I would go in the house after seeing that, but I did.
Wow.
But that was the extent of it, you know? It was never... I realize so many kids don't have that. And That's something that we need to focus on. Every kid has the right to be able to express themselves, to be able to be who they are, and to not live in fear and not live in unhealthy environments, i.e. smoke-filled houses and things like that. There are so many different levels. And it's just, I guess if nothing else, what good has come out of this whole Roy Moore thing is that people are talking about it more, to make a pun. It's something we need to address. And the fact that it's coming out in so many different arenas, so many different places, that tells me that... this is everywhere, and we need to address that issue. And you know what? We are already out of time. Boy, that went fast. We could easily take calls and talk about this. Maybe in weeks ahead, as I'm sure more people get accused and fall from grace, we'll have more opportunity to speak about this.
Yeah, and it's a really difficult issue, I think, and it's sensitive, and there's a lot of aspects and. Everyone has different history and experiences in upbringing. So it's not something we're going to be able to cover in a show or even in a bridge show, but it's certainly something that is out there right now. And as a society, we're listening. This is something we're supporting. People who've been hurt, we're supporting their story and making sure they're able to seek justice and heal. And I think this should be a moment and a way for us as a society to forge ahead and, have more healthy and precocious young people as well as healthy, well-adjusted adults.
Absolutely. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your thoughts and feelings on anything we've discussed. You know, it's interesting. I was playing random music the other day, and it's incredible. This song just came up, and I'd never heard this song before. It's from Terry Hall and Fun Boy 3. Terry Hall used to be in the Specials, and this actually is the last song on the last Fun Boy 3 album. And it's a song where basically he reveals to the world that he was abused as a kid on a school trip to Paris. And he had never told anybody about this. He used his art to just basically out the whole thing. And, you know, we all have the power to do that, to express ourselves in one way or another. There are outlets. We all have outlets. And this was the outlet he chose. And it really was very powerful. And I want to thank iTunes for for randomly picking this song that woke me up. And this will be our outro today. Again, we won't be here next week live. We'll be here from somewhere on tape, and we'll be passing through Alabama at some point. So please write to us, otw@2600, with your suggestions on what we can do. Stay tuned for basketball. Good night.
You took me to France on the promise of teaching me French. We were told to assemble to meet up at 10. I was 12 and naive. You planned out our route. I sat in your car, my suitcase in the boot, on the M1 and the A1 until we reached Dover through passport control. You pulled your car over on the liner. We stood on the deck, we left port. My first time abroad, a school trip to France. Well, fancy that. Watching me, I crept into bed, you pretended to read. The lights went out, I fell asleep, woke up with a shock and your hands on me. I couldn't shout, I couldn't scream, let me out, let me dream. I turned on to my side, I lay there and cried on my first night in France. Well, fancy that. You terrified me, I just wanted to sleep. Well, fancy that. Abuse and the scars that it leaves. Where do you draw the line on school trips to France? Well, fancy that. You had a good time, turned sex into crime. Well, fancy that.
Most gas now contains 10% ethanol, and that's okay. Gas with higher than 10%. Not okay for your mower, chainsaw, generator, even if it's cheaper. What you put in your car may no longer be safe for other engines. When getting gas, look before you pump. Using 15, 30, or 85% ethanol is harmful and illegal to use in outdoor power equipment. Price is no longer the way to choose your fuel. You have to choose the right fuel. Look before you pump. Protect your equipment. Stick with E10 or less.
Looking for love? Are you ready for a long-term committed relationship? Do you dream of curling up next to someone who is warm and loving? If you answer yes to all of these, you may be ready to open your heart and your home to one of the millions of dogs and cats who are waiting in shelters for a permanent home. By adopting your four-legged friend rather than buying one from a breeder or a pet store, you'll help save a life and find true love. For more information, please visit helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Coast Guard. I'm the safety pirate.
And you do what?
Why, I'm a fellow boat and safety enforcer. You know, wear your life jacket, take a boat and safety course, the usual boat and safety stuff.
Oh, so you must know the new homeland security issues for recreational boaters, right?
The landlubbers what?
Homeland security. You know, no anchoring under bridges, keeping your distance from all U.S. naval and commercial vessels, avoiding security zones and busy ports. Ring a bell?
Oh, those issues.
Yeah.
Say, you happen to have a copy of those. You know, for the, uninformed boaters?
Right.
Make sure you know the new Homeland Security issues for boating. Visit www.safeboatingcouncil.org. By doing your part, you can help your boating law enforcement officials do theirs.
And remember, matey, boat smart, boat safe.
During this warm season, we'd like to remind all bicyclists to take safety along for the ride, too. Wear a helmet, approach intersections with caution, yield to pedestrians, and stay as far to the right as possible. Remember, motorists often don't expect bicyclists to be on the roadways. So enjoy the beautiful weather that's in our future and ride with caution. And take safety along for the ride, too.
FM WUSB 90.1 FM.
Coming to you from Long Island Sound, where the hippest music can be found, like a buried treasure underground. Clam Radio. And having fun, spinning tunes since 1961. Getting absolutely nothing done. Clam Radio. Right.
Thursdays from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Can you dig it?
One Sunday night in the WUSB studios, the debate centered around the electronic strike zone.
I want the radar, Joe.
Oh, I know you do, Jeff. Well,
yeah, but I watch those Yankee games, and Judge gets called on a ball that's below his knees.
I will.
Like I said before, it takes the human element out.
After the midnight
hour. I want human element. I want the
human element. Everyone wants the human element.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
I saw that one coming a mile away.
The sports section. Each and every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to midnight on 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. We're looking for a few good men and women.
This is Michael Dorn of Star Trek The Next Generation, and your hailing frequencies are open to 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook, where every Friday night at 11:30, Destinies, the voice of science fiction, goes where no radio show has gone before.
This is Purple Starlight. Tune in every other Monday morning from midnight to 3 right here on 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook.
Drugs, rock and roll, and workhorse on Monday mornings from 7 to 10.
Every Monday, 7 to 10, you're going to get the best rock and roll. From Workhorse to Rock and Roll Jesus. Rock and roll, R&B, soul to funk, punk, no junk. We're going to enjoy ourselves from 7 to 10 every Monday morning. Workhorse Radio on the box. Come on and join me. Here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Everyone, and welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves women's base basketball. We're a little bit ahead of ourselves. Anyway, they are ready to take on the Hofstra Pride. Live from Hofstra Arena, Joe Cacavalli and Jim Furchland.
Thank you, Matt. We are here in Hofstra. Yes, Matt, baseball's a little far away, but basketball is ready to go here tonight. Joe Cacavalli here with Jim Furchland. It's the battle for Long Island as the Stony Brook Seawolves. They are on the road to take on the Hofstra Pride. And Jim, this has been a matchup that's kind of troubled these Seawolves the last few years. 1-6 overall. They lost last year to this team as well at Allen Farrell Credit Union Arena. But what's different now? Shawnee Johnson, some young faces. She is in the starting lineup tonight. Had some calf issues last game, but she's ready to go. And the Seawolves team look to pick up their second win of the year.
Yeah, they're looking for their second win of the year. You're right. And this team is whole lot of new faces for this Stony Brook women's basketball team. But Shawnee Johnson was the difference maker last game when they hosted Manhattan and got their first win of the year, 74-59. But we don't know about her limited action. She may be limited today with a calf injury. She did put up 20 points on 15 field goal attempts. Along with that, see what Gio Perez could do. She didn't play much in the first game of the season, but now you're playing Hofstra. This is a cross-town rivalry, and Stony Brook needs to bring their A game today because Hofstra's 2-0.
Yeah, Gio Perez could be someone that sees some more minutes if Johnson does have to come out at any point. But the play that's really worth keeping an eye on for the Pride is Ashune Durant. She's the senior forward. She averaged a double-double last year. These Seawolves know her all too well. They're going to try and shut her down here tonight as much as possible. And they were able to shut down Kayla Grimmie, the star for Manhattan last game. We'll see how they can do. Both teams coming off wins in their first game. And Hofstra just played America Eastmont. They beat UMBC here at home on Saturday, so they're looking to keep things going. Stony Brook, a very short road trip, so at least they got to sleep in their own beds last night.
Yeah, not only did Hofstra beat UMBC, they pretty much dismantled them by 16 points, 71-55. But if I'm looking at anyone for Hofstra also, I'm watching out for Lexus Davis, another person who really goes as a recognized player for the Pride. And if there's one player to watch out for Stony Brook, I'm watching out for India Paganto. Possibly see if she can shut down Ashinawe Durant, who averaged a double-double last year. It's a cross-town rivalry, similar to what Stony Brook Albany was in the football game, but when it's Hofstra Stony Brook, more time than not, it's going to be a close one.
And obviously, non-conference matchup, Stony Brook and America East, Hofstra in the CAA. CAA sounds a little familiar to Stony Brook fans because of football. America East is their basketball conference. Either way, should be an interesting one here. Right a few minutes away from game time, and a player that really stepped up last game for Stony Brook, other than Shawnee Johnson, was Jarrell Matthews. She had a stroke from deep, and if she's got Johnson on the court 100%, they can really run this offense well. We showed a lot of balance last game between them, so both teams put up 70 in their first game. Should be interesting to see what their offenses can do to follow up.
Yeah, when you had Shawnee Johnson with 20 points, then Jarrell Matthews contributed with 13 with 8 rebounds, along 5-12 shooting from the floor. So she had a pretty efficient shooting night against Manhattan. But then again, Manhattan doesn't even come close to how efficient Hofstra can be, especially this year when you have someone averaging a double-double. So you had Kayla Grimm, who was a pretty good player, but this Hofstra team has a lot of weapons, and if Stony Brook can stop them, Stony Brook can be okay. Well, who knows? This is a road game, and Stony Brook could be different as a road team, but see what happens tonight.
Should be interesting to see what Hofstra team shows up. The resume speaks for itself for head host Krista Kilburn-Stavetsky. She's now in her 12th season, 191 career wins here in Hofstra. She led the team to back-to-back 21 seasons the last couple years. Last year, they kind of struggled to a 13-18 record.
but we know for a fact this team has talent on both sides of the ball. They only had 13 turnovers against UMBC compared to 19 for Stony Brook that they had against the Jaspers. So Hofstra played a very efficient game. They're going to look to Stony Brook's want to jump the lanes a little bit like they did against the Jaspers on Saturday.
Yeah, well, Stony Brook couldn't play any better than they did in the Jaspers. When you win by 15 points, you pretty much dominate both offensively and defensively. And Stony Brook last year wasn't known for putting up that amount of points. So now you're on the road today. Stony Brook needs to really find out what their identity is going to be possibly in this game. Because Hofstra, I think it's going to be a very good game. I think Hofstra's going to put up a lot of points on the scoreboard. Stony Brook's got a young team, six new faces, one returning senior in Aaliyah Worley. Stony Brook is definitely outmatched when it comes to experience on this team, but I'm looking forward to this one. I don't have a favor. I think it's going to come down to the wire.
This could be a really good early test for this young Stony Brook team. See how well they mesh. These are the starting lineups for both teams. First, the visiting Stony Brook Seawolves. Cheyenne Clark gets back in there. 6 points, seven boards in her debut. She pounded the glass. She's got Jarrell Matthews, Shawnee Johnson at the guards, and Aaliyah Worley, India Pagan, both starting for them. And then for Hofstra, it'll be Alexis Davis and Ashoni Durant, who we talked about before. Alina Leon, Olivia Askin, and Marianne Kalen. That's the starting five for the hosting Pride. They'll pick up their second win of the year. This is part of a quick two-game road trip for the Seawolves. As of this, they go on the road to face Farley Dickinson. That's going to be next Sunday. That's going to be on Sunday, but Coach McCombs thinking about this game a lot. She couldn't pick up the win in the last time they matched up. This is her fourth season, so she needs to keep her team focused, and really this non-conference schedule is going to look to get them on the same page.
And I think McCombs definitely has her players composed. I mean, when you had a good win coming off last week against Manhattan, and I think they just need to have this offensive play thing. You had three players in double figures, four of them combined for 40, and then you take away the 45 points last year combined between Scott, Bismatter, along with Corey Bain-Walker. So, depending on how Stover plays tonight, could be a repetition game that they had against Manhattan offensively.
And it looks like these two teams are ready for the national anthem and the pregame ceremony, so we'll send it up to the PA booth.
She's an NCAA, Honorable Mention All-American. But let me tell you this,
Here courtside, just about ready for the opening tip. Joe Cacavalli and Jim Furchin here bringing you all the action tonight in the battle for Long Island. Seawolves, look, both the Seawolves and the Pride of Hofstra looking to go to 2-0 on this young women's basketball season. As you just heard the starting five, Seawolves gave their players a cheer as they came through. They know they're on a different floor tonight, but they're still technically at home, didn't have to travel far, so it was a good thing for them. There's the opening tip, and it is taken by the Seawolves. Johnson has it. We are underway. Johnson at the half-court logo finds Matthews up top to Clark.
It looks like Haas is going man-to-man to start off this possession. So switch on screens.
Wheels into the corner. Pass underneath for Worley. Tries to go up, blocked inside. And the Pride bring it back the other way.
And who else but Durant to block that shot to get the morale going for the Pride.
Davis drives inside. Pass down low. Finds Kaywood. Back up top, Davis. Face to face with Clark. Askin makes a move. Gets a pick. She puts up a three. And that one too strong. Offensive rebound taken in by Kaywood.
Just had an opportunity as the ball just goes off the foot of Lexis Davis. And somehow Maria Kaylin was able to retrieve the ball back and get a new 35 seconds for Hofstra.
Kaylin to her right, puts a pass up top.
Very nice pick.
Pass down low, inside, roll up and good. Kaylin puts in the first basket of the night, and the Pride take the first lead.
That was a gorgeous feed right to Kaylin, and she was able to just get onto the right side, put up the land, and it just went off the edge of the rim and back in as Hofstra gets the first points in this game.
Royal pass up top to Begon. Matthews finds Johnson. The 5-1 Johnson drives it side, puts it up with the right hand. The flex rim, no good. Clark pulls down the offensive board. Puts it up again. It's an end-one opportunity. And it's an offensive foul.
That's a questionable call. I didn't really see where the contact was. I think I wish Clark who had extended her elbow possibly. Don't know
what the call was. Ball down low. Rules one taken by Durant. Pass finds Leon in the corner. Shot goes up. No good. Offensive rebound by Durant. Davis drives in. Pass deflected out. And it is going to be Hofstra ball under the net. Looked like it was Matthews who got a piece of it. And the Pride reset on Easter 25 on the shot clock.
Yeah, Storybook needs to talk defensively. I just see them running around and no one's really talking. And
corner shot comes up. Too short. And taken down by Pagan. Johnson runs the offense the other way. Face-to-face with Davis. Pass to Matthews beyond the arc. Wolves to her right. Pass back from Begon. Davis drives in. No basket, but a whistle is blown.
And if you look, and if you, I can see right here, Johnson, she's got a tight brace on that cast, so she can stay healthy. Looks like she's going to be good to go for this game and get a lot of minutes for the Seawolves.
pair of free throws. So Matthews looking for the tie. First one up, switches through. The Seawolves are on the board. Matthews puts this one up, switches that one again. So Seawolves get their first 2 points of the night. Pride back the other way. Davis with Johnson in the face. Drives forward, gets inside, pass off to Kalen. Pass up top, finds Leone. Leone, bounce pass, looks for Durant. Tries to get around Clark, goes away by Johnson. Johnson on the fast break, has Matthews wide open for the layup on the other end. And the Seawolves have their first lead of the night at 4-2.
That's how Stoddard needs. You need to play that up-tempo defense. And just like that, defense is converted to offense. Great eyes from Shawnee Johnson to find Jerome Matthews for the breakaway layup, and Sternberg takes the lead.
Kalen, pass to Davis. Davis gets a pick, drives inside, looks for a pass, and foul going to be called. Johnson picks up her first, and possession will reset for the Pride. Davis finds Askin, pulls up a jumper, no good. Rebound tipped around, taken back by the Pride. Askin with an offensive board. Davis, pass up top to Durant. Davis takes it back. Slows down to set up a play. Kalen, pass to Leone. Leone drives around the pick. Pass to Kalen down low. Shot goes up, no good. Rebound taken again, another offensive board. That one blocked inside.
Stony Brook's just watching the ball land into the opposing team of Hofstra almost on every possession. They have they have five offensive rebounds already.
Davis, pass comes inside of Durant. Shot inside, up the glass, and good. Durant's got that. Go for Durant, and now we're tied at four.
She's got that high step to add to that length that made it very easy for her to get to the bucket, and she converts 2 points.
Johnson, bounce pass to Pagan. Hand off back to Johnson. Pass inside to Pagan. Gets it stripped away and a turnover by the Seawolves. Here comes Hofstra the other way. Davis has Kalen driving to the basket. Pass up top, finds Leone. Drives on Matthews. Puts it up with the right hand. No good. Rebound tipped by Pagan and out. And still remains with Hofstra, the new shot clock. So already Seawolves being out-rebounded early, including four offensive boards for the Pride. Things still tied in the first 4 minutes of this one. As here comes...
The only takeaway that you can take that's positive from Stony Brook is that they're locking them down. 2 of 9 from the field for Hofstra right now. Stony Brook, 1 for 3, not getting a lot of shot attempts.
Inbound pass from Askin, pass outside. Drives in, bounce pass, loose handled by Davis. Outside, Kalen puts up a jumper. That one's good.
Kalen's able to be a stretch four in a way as she hits the nice 17-foot jumper. And that's going to be tough for India Pagan to guard that along with rebound when you got Durant, who's a sensational rebounder who averaged 11 last year.
Long two puts the Pride up a bucket. Johnson has Davis. Fakes a three and keeps it. Town on the shot clock. Johnson drives inside. Shot goes up. No good. Whistle blown. And Johnson will go in for her first free throws of the night.
Yeah, Johnson, clearly the quickest player on the court right now, and she goes right up against the bigger Marianne Kalen and is able to draw contact, and she goes to the line for the first time tonight.
Third and fourth free throw attempts for the Seawolves. Johnson looks for her first points of the night. First free throw up, rattles in, and Johnson on the board with the first made free throw as we get first substitutions of the night. For the Seawolves, it'll be Mackenzie Boucher. Looks like it'll be Karsten for Hofstra. That one switches through. Game tied once again at 6. So the Seawolves 4-4 early from the line. Davis gets around Johnson, moves quickly.
Johnson not giving Davis an inch to dribble the ball. She's guards her tight all the way up to the half-court line.
Leone drives inside, foul call before the shot. Worley.